I think online coaching seems to work. There's many ways you can do it. I think finding what works best for you and what works best for your client is going to be a very important thing that you need to understand. So think about it.
Hi, Jason. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Thank you for having me. My name is Jason Clark. I am online powerlifting coach, so coach for the New Zealand team. I've been online coaching for about 8 years now. I've been within the fitness industry since I was 21, so about 12 years. I also have studied at the Auckland University of Technology, and I've just recently completed my master's and had my manuscript published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. I did that alongside my supervisors and co-authors, Eric Helms and Alyssa Joy Spence.
All right. So we're talking coaching, online coaching specifically. Do we need some kind of definition to start with?
Yeah. I mean, I think where the lines potentially get blurred with online coaching is it can often be referred to as remote coaching. But I think just in the current world that we live in, it's generally like online coaching just means delivering whatever coaching method and however you do through the internet. Usually via means of sending something through over email, spreadsheet. A lot of people like to utilize WhatsApp a lot, but you know, anything that basically involves internet and, you know, with the removal of any sort of face-to-face contact outside of like in powerlifting specifically, outside of like competition days where most people will interact with their coaches in person.
Why you did your study? So obviously you are using this method to deliver your coaching, but why to study it?
That is a great question. I think for me, it's a case of, it's a selfish reason really more than anything, because I, as I kind of mentioned, have been delivering online coaching for a reasonable amount of time now. So I think there's a way that things are done, but my sort of critical analytical mind is like, why are we doing it like this? Is there a better way to do this? Because obviously it's a very, I mean, in the grand schemes of like coaching as a practice, delivering it online is like very new, right? Yeah, it's only really gained popularity probably over the last 10 years and like probably only really started in the last like 14 years. So for me, I'm like, okay, well, this is how we're doing it. What does this mean? Like, and what can we sort of, what sort of correlations can we draw based off of what we're doing? And probably more importantly, what I wanted to know is like, I had an idea of what people were doing. Is this actually what people are doing? So I wanted just to gather some data on like what current practices are primarily, and then just compare them to, you know, specific outcomes.
All right. So what were the questions? How many, how did you structure the survey? And
I think the survey was about 24 to 27 questions, something around that. So we wanted to find out basically whether they were receiving their coaching via like a verbal communication or written communication. And then on top of that, we wanted to know like at what sort of frequency they were receiving that communication. So whether that was, I think the categories were like once every session, once per week, once every 2 weeks, once a month, and then like less than once a month. And then just kind of getting a gauge of where their total was at before they started coaching and where their total was at their most recent competition. And they had to have done like, I think it was just at least two competitions so we could have a comparison. Some people obviously had competed for a decent amount of time, but we've got their before coaching or their first and then their most recent. Also just kind of finding out how long they've been receiving coaching for. So yeah, those were pretty much the main questions. Also just getting a gauge how strong they were. So like we asked for what's like called a good lift points, which is basically a body weight coefficient score. So it gives us a generalized idea of how strong everyone is irrespective of their body weight.
Awesome. And in terms of satisfaction, or how did you measure that?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So we also, another key one was asking how satisfied they were with their whole coaching process. It was a really easy scale. Number like one was just like extremely dissatisfied, and then five was like extremely satisfied. So yeah, as I kind of spoke about before, important variable just to kind of understand whether people were enjoying it or not, because it seems like something that would be important when you're paying for a service.
Yes. All right. How many people and who did you get? Just so we kind of understanding.
Yeah.
Was the population who actually took the survey and
Yeah, so we had 113 data points that we used in the end. I think we scratched about 20 or so, something like 130 or something. We actually had like 250 people fill it out, but there was a whole bunch of bad ones for whatever reason. But it ended up being like 113 data points. It was like pretty close, 50-50-ish. It was like 59 male, 54 female. So pretty even split, which is actually really good. It's quite representative of the powerlifting demographic as a whole. Probably higher amount of females than what you would get in just like a general split in powerlifting. But I think that's a good thing. So pretty 50-50. Strength-wise, people were actually pretty strong. Just find it real quick. Yeah, so the average totals were for the men 621 kilos, which is pretty decent. And if we were to put that in good lift points, it's 81, which is like above average, just to kind of say. So like a decent amount above average. And then for the feet, sorry, go on.
Huge part of my audience are Olympic weightlifting coaches and athletes. So 81 points, is it like a national level athlete?
Let's just say like 81 points for me as a 93 kilo lifter, that's about 650 total. So we're looking at like roughly like a 225 kilo squat, 150 kilo bench press, and then like a 275 kilo deadlift. So I would say above, well, definitely well above average. So the strength of people that were filling the form out were definitely more than you would usually get at like a normal level powerlifting competition. I think it would actually be also important to mention that I had a whole bunch of posters to recruit people up at, like we hosted Commonwealth in Auckland. So I had posters up with the QR code on it that I got people to fill out whilst they were there. So these are international level lifters that are filling it out, which I think probably skewed it slightly higher. So just in general, pretty strong people. Like, yeah, stronger than your average powerlifter, let's just say.
You had really, really strong lifters. Why do you think they chose to have online coaching? They are international level lifters. Wouldn't it be better to, if you are an international level athlete, wouldn't it be better to have a coach in person? Would it matter more, maybe? Would it matter less?
This is kind of the age-old question, powerlifting, and to be honest, one that I get every time I tell someone I coach powerlifting online, because they always go, why do you do it online? Shouldn't you do it in person? Essentially, we don't really know, because not many people coach in person. And I would say probably 99% of the world champions in powerlifting are all coached online. Yeah. Honestly, it's just common practice. I think it's due to the simplicity of the sport. But this is kind of why I wanted to dive into it, right? Because I'm like, you know, online coaching is very new, but it's so prevalent within powerlifting. Like, again, probably 99% of people receive their coaching online. So I'm like, okay, well, is this like, what does it look like? You know, I didn't really go into comparing to in-person coaching because it wasn't really the idea of what I wanted to do, because at the end of the day, it's so embedded within powerlifting. I just don't see that being very relevant. So I'd rather understand like different characteristics of online coaching as opposed to comparing it to in-person. But obviously part of my like literature review, everything was comparing or finding literature that compares online to in-person. And no, for the most part, you know, the literature that I found was more within like the like health outcomes. You know, we're talking about like people for weight loss coaching or like diabetes coaching, things like this. And for the most part, online coaching does tend to hold its own. But it's, you know, again, it's these aren't performance outcomes. So it's kind of hard to say because you're not sitting there like trying to push someone harder or, you know, critique the technique. It seems to work from what we can see. People are getting stronger. That's kind of what my research showed as well, if anything. But it potentially, like something that we found in the research was that people in the survey, I should say, that there was a correlation between the amount of time spent with a coach and increase in powerlifting total. So basically the longer people worked with coaches, the stronger that they got. And we did kind of like wonder whether that would be quicker if you're working with someone in person, because it takes longer to get to know someone if you don't speak to them as frequently, which is also kind of like part of the reason why I was like, I think, you know, I hypothesized in the manuscript, like I thought verbal communication would be better because, you know, you can call someone, you have a chat, talk about things. So I thought that might lead to better outcomes, but it didn't really show anything. There was no association there.
So what are the common practices of the coaches and then how it influences satisfaction or how it's correlated to satisfaction and to the performance?
So firstly, like what we observed was that basically all coaches communicated either every session or they communicated like once per week. So there was only like 8 data points outside of that that were every 2 weeks, once per month or or more. So everyone was basically receiving feedback once a week or after every session. So those were the most common ones. And probably what surprised us there was the prevalence of every session feedback. It was like 30%, 37% of the respondents, just because, like I'd mentioned prior, a lot of what was more common practice was week to week. So we were like, oh, okay, we didn't realize that many people were receiving communication that frequently. And to be honest, I think that would be even higher now. Most people were receiving written feedback. So 60%, 40% were verbal. Most people were pretty happy with their coaching, so either extremely satisfied or somewhat. And then most people were like their coach, because another thing, I don't know if we spoke about it yet, but another thing that we asked was like the level of education from the coach, because we thought that that might be quite important. Yeah, so one of the things we wanted to know was like, because again, it's a bit of a cowboy sort of industry, you know, there's no, you don't need to apply or anything, you just start your own business. So what we wanted to know was like, okay, do these people have formal education? And that formal education was relevant to the field of like sports science, kinesiology, anything like that. So 30% people, coaches, I should say, had an undergraduate degree at least, 10% postgrad, and then the other highest one was 30% didn't know what their coach had for education, which I also find interesting, because it means that people, you know, 30% of people don't know, it means they probably don't care or they can't remember. So yeah, that was like what was going on. As for what we found that frequency of communication had no effect on a lifter satisfaction or increase in powerlifting total. And we found the same thing for the way that it was delivered. So it didn't matter whether you delivered it written or verbal, it didn't seem to have an effect on, nothing significant on how satisfied the person was or how much their total increased, which surprised me. I had an inkling that I thought verbal feedback would at least lead to a bit more satisfaction, just because it seems more personable. But so outside of that, another kind of key variable we looked at was like the length of coaching relationships. So something we found there was that longer, like this is probably the strongest thing that we found, was that longer relationships were associated with a higher increase in powerlifting total, which is pretty intuitive. Basically, the longer you work with someone, the more you know about them, the better your relationship gets and the better work that the coach can do. And also, it's just more time training. So it kind of makes sense there. But I think it might be intuitive, but I do think that that is a big takeaway for people, because a common practice in powerlifting, I shouldn't say common practice, but a thing that happens in powerlifting is people coach hop. Whereas this kind of says the opposite, like you should spend time with your coach, figure it out, you know, communicate so that you guys can kind of like figure it out together. And that way is more likely to increase your outcomes there, especially when it comes to your total. What we did find was that there was a relationship between education and increase in total. So we did actually find that lifters who were working with coaches who had a higher education actually tended to increase their total more. So get stronger I'm not going to say as a byproduct of it, because it's all correlational, but like there was a relationship there, which I thought was interesting. What was also really interesting is that we found that with lifter satisfaction, we kind of use a different ordinal scale for figuring out these relationships. It's quite confusing to read, but the crux of it is, and if everyone actually reads this, they probably get confused by this section, because the stats we had to do was just a bit complex. But what we found was that the satisfaction with the coaching got to a certain point in education, which was up to undergraduate degree. And then once the person had a postgraduate degree, the actual satisfaction dropped off, which was an interesting one, because we kind of hypothesized that perhaps like someone who is partaking in postgraduate education might actually not have the resources to, you know, potentially give as much time to coaching as someone would who is maybe has an undergraduate degree, and perhaps they're spending their time, more time coaching, because they're not having to continue their studies. Also, we thought maybe a specific type of person who tends to dive into postgraduate studies who might have less soft skills, more programming skills, things like this. I mean, maybe that's kind of what's going on there. But again, you know, it's all very correlational, not causative.
What was correlated to lifter satisfaction? So possibly may influence lifter satisfaction, and what is correlated with the performance?
Yeah, so I'll start with performance, because it's probably a bit more fun and there's a bit more correlations going on there. But with the performance, the main thing, like I said, was working with someone for a longer period of time, which I thought was great. I think it kind of somewhat like vindicating, you know, it's like, hey, look, we're not making mistakes here. We're actually managing to get people stronger over time, which I think is good. And I think it's intuitive, but it's nice to see it studied and, you know, portrayed. So yeah, that, and then like we spoke about with the coach education. So obviously that was linked to improvement in performance too, which again, very interesting. And then for satisfaction, yeah, there was like wasn't really much going on with the satisfaction. People who were with their coach longer had slightly more non-significant relationship with the satisfaction. So again, kind of what you expect. I would have actually expected it to be significant, just because you think if you're going to spend a long time with someone, you're probably a bit more satisfied, but didn't quite see that. And then, yeah, the other thing, I mean, I spoke about how education had that drop off, which I think is interesting. And then the other thing with satisfaction was that lifters who had higher body weight coefficient score generally tended to have higher levels of satisfaction. So basically stronger people were happier, which is not surprising, because obviously, you know, they're getting more out of their training, I think. So yeah, those are kind of the main things.
It's very natural. If everything goes well, it's working. So it's pretty obvious that it's working. The problem is to recognize what is going wrong when the things are not going bad. Is it just we have to adjust things? Is it I'm as a lifter doing things wrong, or coaches doing things wrong? Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, an interesting one, which kind of falls under what you're saying with regards like communicating these things, is the fact that there wasn't a relationship between modes or frequencies of communication. You know, basically what I came away with thinking is like, okay, well, it doesn't matter if I do it verbally or do it via written feedback, or I do it every session, or I do it once per week. From the relationships that I'm looking at, it doesn't seem to really matter. So, okay, what can I do with that? Okay, I've got more tools in my toolkit, so I can use more frequent communication when it suits the lifter, or I can use written feedback when it suits the lifter. Bearing in mind, I want to maintain some sort of consistency among my practice, just to help me be able to consistently conduct my business. But there's other ways to do it, and it just seems, from what we could tell from these correlations and these relationships, that, you know, if you have, or even if just you as a coach want to communicate in a certain way, you know, you've got a few options there that are seem to be okay, at least from what we can gather, which I think is important, because it's important to know how I want to communicate with you and how you want to communicate with me. So we can kind of like find a medium middle ground.
I think that's a great news, because it gives options. And, you know, it's a big chunk of literature on that people learn differently. Some people need to see it, some people need to listen to it. And if you have these options, you can either adjust to your style or to your lifter style or both. And it works equally good if performed to, I expect, to a certain level.
Yeah, it's definitely made me consider it a lot more, just kind of seeing that level of flexibility, because I think even just as a coach, sometimes it can get a bit monotonous doing the same thing over and over in the way that you communicate with someone. You know, if I'm sending you a 5-10 minute voice video message every week, which is generally how I do things, sometimes I want to break it up and I want to speak a little bit more throughout the week. And like, I think that, you know, especially in a, you know, let's say we're in a phase where I know there's a lot of stress around training, and you know, I want to know kind of what's happening a little bit earlier. I think it's valuable to be able to kind of tap into that when you need it, if you need to do it. It made me think a lot more about like, what do I want to be doing here? Because I kind of fell into the weekly thing because that was just what I, like, you know, I had a coach before that, and that's what he did, and that was kind of common practice at the time. So yeah, I'm interested to see how things develop, because like I said, if I was to survey people now, especially with like knowing more people, I think the highest count would 100% be the more frequent communication. But you know, I could pick flaws in each kind of methodology or each method of communicating, right? So it's interesting. It's something that I continually think about. I think it's important just for people to understand that this is just like, it's something, you know, I just wanted to put something out there in the online powerlifting, very specific niche coaching area, because I think these are things that people aren't really thinking about and they're not studying. And I think it's important, like there's so many online coaches now in powerlifting, yet we don't really know what is good practice. So I just wanted to be like, look, this is just, I want to just get an idea of what's going on. So I think it's good for people just to think about how they are conducting their coaching and what works for them, what works for their client, and just kind of understanding what is going on. And then I think on top of that, honestly, I would love for someone to take this and run with it and do some control trials and actually like potentially compare it to in-person coaching. No, not me. I'm done. I'm tapped out. Eric would say otherwise. But yeah, I want someone to run with it and I want someone to do some control trials and just see like, okay, you know, we've got one group that is doing their feedback every session. And then, I mean, to be honest, a good place would start would be one group would being coached online and then the other group just being coached in person. And then just seeing like, okay, well, we've got the online characteristics. Now, what does that look like in comparison to in-person coaching? And does one outperform the other? And then I think, you know, along the way, it's not just about performance outcomes. It's like, how much is the lifter getting out of this as well? I think that's so important to me to know, like, this is why satisfaction was such a big part of this survey, is because like, I think that bleeds into so many positive outcomes if they're enjoying themselves. Plus, like, you know, this is a hobby for a lot of people. You want to make sure that they're enjoying it. It's not all about just getting stronger. A lot of it is, but, you know, a lot of it's just like, am I enjoying what I'm getting here? So yeah, I'd love for someone to run with it if they could. If they want to, reach out to me and we can ideate, but yeah, it's probably not going to be me.
We shall wait. We will let you breathe a little bit. Did you change anything in your coaching after running this study and having these results?
I would say I have been open to speaking with people more frequently now. But I think that's not just a byproduct of my own research, but also just like talking to people and asking them questions about how they do their coaching when they get more frequent feedback. Something that I would like to do, which I haven't really said to anyone, would be to, because I'm very intrigued by this higher frequency contact point, and I would like to kind of trial it with some of my clients and just see A, if they like it, and B, if I like it, and just kind of put it out to all of my clients and be like, hey, do some people think that they would benefit more from this? Which I think, to me, like in an ideal world, I think that would be good, just to kind of let them choose which way they want to be communicated with. And obviously you have to make a decision on like whether you think that's good for them as well, because some people will say, oh yeah, week to week's good, and then they just never talk to you. But I think I'd like to just have them somewhat choose, but then I also need to consider how that affects me and the way that I conduct my business, because if I'm jumping back and forth between different communication methods, it's less easy for me to get into a workflow if my days are a bit disjointed. So yeah, I think to answer your question, come back to that somewhat now, but it's opened up some doors for the future.
All right, so you have more questions and more things to think about.
Yeah, that's such as life really, isn't it? Always more to think about.
Fair point. All right, let's bring it together. Your takeaways for coaches. It doesn't have to be powerlifting coaches. It can be in general. Your 3 cents to everyone who's listening.
I think online coaching seems to work. There's many ways you can do it. I think finding what works best for you and what works best for your client is going to be a very important thing that you need to understand. So think about it. And then I think from a coaching and a lifter standpoint, there is a lot to be said with sticking it out with a coach and figuring these things out before you just jump ship. I think it's always a case of the grass is greener with a lot of people, but I think, you know, there's some associations here to suggest, and also just like from my own practice, that hashing it out together and working together on potentially the problems that you're having could be more valuable than just going elsewhere. Because if you start again with someone else, you've got to build that whole relationship back up, and that doesn't happen overnight.
All right, 2 short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
Oh, it's not the bench press, that's for sure. Nothing I hate more. It's got to be the squat. I'm always most excited to squat. It's like, it invokes far more anxiety because it's just a little bit more, you know, you got weight on your back. It seems to be a little bit more at stake. I kind of suck at squatting. So to me, it's a puzzle in figuring out how to like do it well and how to program it. It sets the tone for the competition, sets the tone for the day. I love it. You know, if I could do it more, I would, but my body won't really allow for it. So yeah, definitely a squat. I think a lot of people would say the squat. It's exciting. I'm better at deadlifting, but it's easy. You just pick it up.
Good job. All right. And if people want to contact you or see what you're up to, where should they go online?
Probably the best place would just be my Instagram, JasonVClark_NSBB. If they're wanting to reach out about online coaching, there's a form there that they can fill out. They can always just send me a message. I also run a gym in Auckland, North Shore Barbell. It's more of a club than anything. So if they wanted to sign up and get into powerlifting and happen to be listening on the North Shore of Auckland, then feel free to ask about that as well. But yeah, that's kind of the main medium that I use.
Awesome, Jason. Thank you so much for today. It was a pleasure.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.